So we're getting here on the top of Pei Aleph Amud Aleph, seven lines down. Rav v'Rav Yehuda, Havaka Azle Borcha. Rav and Yehuda were walking along the way. Rav Yehuda, Tamid Mufak of Rav. Havaka Azle Hayitata Kamayu. There was this woman who was in front of them. There's seemingly the cases where she is ahead of them on the path, and they're catching up to her, or they're coming closer to her. Amle Rav, Rav Yehuda, Dal Karech Mikamei Gehinom. Move your legs, brisken, speed up the pace here, so that we don't have to be behind Gehinom, so that we can pass in front of Gehinom. Now, whether that's because he was afraid of Yichud, which is the topic of the Gemara over here, and so he wanted to pass this woman so they wouldn't have a problem of Yichud, or whether it goes to a more general problem of walking behind a woman, which the Gemara talks about in other places as being something problematic, so he wanted to get ahead of the woman because of that, so whatever the reason is. We saw yesterday, that the din of Yichud does not apply by Ksherim, it only applies by Prutzim. We're Ksherim, so there shouldn't be any issue of Yichud, or if you say that the problem is that they're walking behind a woman, he is extrapolating the din and saying that we only worry about these types of issues with Prutzim, we don't worry about it with Ksherim. Who says that we are Ksherim? I didn't say that Ksherim means me and you. So he says, well then who exactly do you consider to be Ksherim? If Rabbi Yehuda and Rav are not considered Ksherim, who exactly are the Ksherim over here? Gagon Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi v'Chavi Rav. Like Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi v'Chavi Rav, which we saw back on Daf Lamatet Amud Bet Mem Amud Aleph, there are three stories that are brought down about Rav Chanina Bar Papi, Rav Kahana, and Rav Tzadok, I think, where they were all propositioned by a matronita, by a Roman matron, and the Gemara there discusses the stories about what happened. One of them jumps into the oven, the other one jumped off the roof, and Eliyahu Navi caught him. Rav Chanina Bar Papi made himself into a disgusting individual so that she wouldn't take him. She cured him back and forth, and then he is saved from Mazikim later on, and people realize that he had overcome the Yetzer of Erva. We're talking about here these big tzaddikim or big chassidim, that is ksherim. But me and you, Rabbi Yehuda and Rav, we're not exactly ksherim. Tosfot Riyaz again says over here, Mistabra Lefnim Mishurat Adin Abad. Obviously here, that is Lefnim Mishurat Adin. There's no question that Rabbi Yehuda and Rav are considered to be ksherim in this aspect, especially since one of the stories there is about Rav Kahana, who's a Talmud of Rav. So if we're talking about Rav Kahana being a kosher, then certainly Rav was a kosher, but he acted lifnim mishurat adin. We don't tempt fate with these types of issues, and therefore, even though we are ksherim, we want to avoid putting ourselves in those predicaments, even though they're not technically yichud. Amar Rav, malkin ala yichud. We give malkut for the violation of yichud. Ve'inu srim ala yichud. But we do not make husband and wife separate over the issues of yichud. So as Rashi notes over here, what does it mean, malkin ala yichud? That is makat mardut. That is rabbinic lashes for the violation of yichud. In low likelihood, that is because the violation here is only a violation b'derabanan, not a violation to uraita. That's what Amar Rashi, lo amra ala b'yichud p'nuya. This is only true when we're talking about yichud with a single woman, a woman who's not married. But b'yichud eishadish, lo. But with a married woman, we do not say that. Shlote motzi lazal b'na. Because then, by giving lashes for yichud, there's an implicit implication of this woman that something was amiss. And if that's the case, people are going to start questioning her children, that maybe they are not her children from her husband, but rather from an extramarital affair. So in order to avoid that outcome, we say no malkot with regards to an eshet ish, because of that publicity which would cause problems for her children. As Rashi notes over here, we're talking about in a period of time where there is no capital punishment. So even if she did have an extramarital affair, the only vehicle in the hands of the Chachamim to punish her are Malkot. So when we're giving her Malkot, it's not clear that you're giving her Malkot for Yichud versus giving her Malkot for violating Niyuf. And so therefore people are not going to be discerning in this manner, and that's going to cast dispersions on the children. So now going back to the first statement, which is Malkin al Yichud. So if anyone sees that we give Malkot for Yichud means that we give Malkot for Pnuyah. Again, Rashi says these are rabbinic lashes, seemingly indicating that we're talking about yichud of a pnuya, of a single woman that has no other issue in terms of this person's relationship with her. You could argue that we're talking about yichud of pnuya when she is a nida, or when she is an erva in some other way, and therefore the malkina, the yichud, is because you're violating yichud deoraita, not simply yichud mi derabanan. Though Rashi is pretty consistent in mentioning, anytime we mention yichud apnuya, he mentions makad mardut, he mentions that it's a din derabonon. Again, I mentioned yesterday that in the Gemara in Ketubot, when we talk about the Birkat Erusin, it says, v'asor lanu et arusot, Rashi says that there, because rabbinically, a pnuya is restricted in yichud. So again, Rashi focuses on this rabbinic aspect of pnuya, although as I mentioned yesterday, many Rishonim believe that yichud with pnuya can be upgraded to deoraita if she's a nida, or if there's any other issue that involves here. Today, all pnuyot are nidot, because they don't go to the mikveh. In the time of the Gemara, where they were makbin on tumah tahara, not just the issue of the woman being muteret to bala, then they were, young women were going to the mikveh as well. So a pnuya could be sometimes a nida, sometimes not a nida. It's not a given that a pnuya is a nida. Now, Enos Rima Yichud, as Rashi says here, we don't separate a husband from a wife over the issue of Yichud. Therefore, and Tosler points this out, the statements are somewhat inconsistent, which is that the first part of the statement of Rav is talking about a pnuya, about a single woman, that we give Malkot for a pnuya that has Yichud. The second statement is talking about an Eshet Ish, which says that we don't separate her from her husband over this issue of Yichud. Tosafot then proposes a second explanation, which is, this is all talking about a pnuya. It's all talking about a single woman, and it says, the first thing is, malkina le-yichud, we give malkot for yichud with a pnuya, and number two, inusrim le-yichud. Just because they had yichud, we're not going to downgrade her status in terms of yichus, and she can still marry a kohen, and she'll still be considered to be a ksheira. Then Tosfot asks, something that we brought up already in the previous dapim, that the Gemara in Ketubot says that if a woman is pregnant, and we don't know who the father is, if we ask her, that's the story with this baby, so there we had a machloket Tanaim, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, when she says, this baby is from so-and-so, and he's a Kohen, meaning that she is saying that the baby is kasher, so then we have that machloket, whether she's ne'emenet or not. There, we said that the nafkamina, or the issue that we're talking about in terms of the yichus of this baby, is whether that baby's allowed to marry a Kohen. And the Gemara there concludes that Mala Asu B'Yuchasin. That they made a Mala B'Yuchasin that even though she might tell us that the baby is kosher, and even if she's Ne'emenet, we still wouldn't let that baby marry a Kohen because of the Mala Asu B'Yuchasin. So Tosfot says, if I'm right about the way that I'm explaining this statement of Rav, then how come over here we say that if she has Yichud, say no problem to marry a Kohen? And over there, where she has the baby and she tells us the baby's kasher, we say, oh, mala asubi yuchsin, and therefore we don't want her marrying a kohen. The answer is the difference in the circumstances, which is over here, all we have is yichud. All we have is that they were secluded together. We have no evidence besides that and no admission besides that they had biyah. So therefore, mala asubi yuchsin is not necessarily applicable over here because it's just yichud. Whereas in the case in the Gemara Ketubot, there's a explicit admission because she's pregnant. So we know she had biyah with someone. So now, when she tells us that it was a biyah with someone who was kasher, okay, she's ne'emenet. But there already we said, ma'ala asubi yuchasin, that we won't let that child, if it's a daughter, marry a kohen, because we already know that there was biyah. So there's more evidence of the fact that there was something amiss, and therefore, ma'ala asubi yuchasin will prevent her from marrying a kohen. Interesting enough is that the Tosfot Riya Zakein says over here, someone who has yichud with a woman, you give both of them makat mardut. If she's a married woman, we don't let her stay with her husband. So it's clear that Tosafot Riyah Zakein is reading this like Tosafot. He's reading Rav's statement referring simply to a pnuya, which says that a pnuya gets malkot. And then we say, inosrin ala yichud is referring to the pnuya, that she's not restricted from marrying kohen. But implicit in that is, if she's an Eshet Ish, she will be Osura al Bala, and we won't let her return to her husband. So that's pretty extreme view here. The Tosfot Riya Zakein says a married woman who has Yichud would then be prevented from returning to her husband. Mazutra Malki umachris. Mazutra used to give malkot and then make a public announcement as to the reason for the malkot. So now from Rashi, it sounds like al yichud eshedish. That when it came to yichud of eshedish, he used to give malkot and would announce it. So as opposed to Rav Ashi, who says by eshedish, we withhold doing anything because we don't want to cast dispersions on the kids. Over here, Marzutra says, I'll solve that problem. I'll give Malkot, but I'll make it clear as to why we're giving the Malkot. On the other hand, you can know that there's the Ot Aleph in the Gra, and it's also noted here in the Tosafot Rita Zakein, that the Rambam says that the case here is that he was Malke Pnuya. When he gave Malkot, this is speaking about a case where he gave Malkot to a single woman, Umachriz, and he would announce why they were giving Malkot to this single woman. Amalei Rav Nachman Mepartayo the Rav Ashi. So my name Luke Velachris. So Rav Nachman Mepartayo says to Rav Ashi, we can solve your problem. You're worried about casting aspersions on the children. Just announce why you're giving the Malkot, and then we won't have a problem anymore. Amalei Yikid the Shama Baha Velo Shama Baha. People have selective hearing, or they only get partial information. Meaning that they'll hear about the fact that you got Malkot, they're not going to hear about the reasons behind that. So since it's not clear to us, or going to be absolutely unquestioned that this is done for Yichud, then I worry about the status of these children, and therefore I don't want to give Malkot to someone who is an Eshadish. I'm Rav. Malkina lo tova shmua. Rav says we give Malkot on rumors that are circulating about the behavior of an individual. Clearly, in the context that this is brought, it's talking about sexual misconduct, and that is true also of the proof from where it's brought. But this is probably a broader statement, which is, if someone is violating Averot, and that's the way Rashi says it, then they're going to give Makat Mardut for it. Now, obviously, we're not talking about simply here just rumors. These are rumors that are persistent, or rumors that include Edut or Edim that are coming and testifying about them. And therefore, there's heavy circumstantial evidence that this individual is violating an Averah. And in that context, we're going to give Malkot to shut down the problem. We want to make sure that people know that if you behave in this manner, even though we don't have evidence directly that you did something wrong, we know that this is not the type of thing that we want in our society. And therefore, we're going to shut it down by giving Makat Mardut. Shenemar, they bring quote the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Al Banai Kilotova Shmua. It's talking about Eli and his sons. The Navi comes to Eli and tells him that his sons are acting inappropriately and that they're doing all these bad things. He chastises his children, obviously not in a strong enough manner, and that's why Beit Eli is destroyed in the end. But he says, Albanai, my children, desist from this. Don't do this. Kilo tovash moa. The rumors that are coming, the things that I'm hearing, are problematic. And we know over there that the Navi describes to us that they were sleeping with the women when they came up to the Mishkan. How literally you take that, Chazal didn't. Even in the Pashtuta Pasuk, it's not clear that that is exactly what they were doing. But it revolves around sexual misconduct as well as inappropriate behavior for a Kohen or a leader of the nation. And there it says, Al Banai. And Rashi says, Al is a Lashon of Lotase. So we see that there's a Lotase involved with problematic rumors. Based on that, we have a hint to the fact that you would give Malkot for the fact that there are negative rumors circulating. Marzucha motiv laf sira al katfei umakrile al banai. So Marzucha used to put, afsira is like a rope or a reins of the animal, Rashi calls it of the chamor, of a donkey. Al katfei, it's not clear here whether it was on his shoulders, meaning our Marzucha's shoulders, or if it was on the shoulders of the individual that they were going to give the Malkot to. That's number one. And number two is, it's not clear here whether they also gave Malkot, or this was in place of Malkot. He put the rope or the reins on top of him, and then Makrile al-Banai, and then he would read him the Pasuk from Shmuel that indicated that the reason they were doing this is because of the negative rumors that were circulating. So again, whether they actually gave him Malkot, or they simply did this in public to shame the individual into understanding that these negative rumors are not acceptable, it's not clear here from exactly what transpired here in the case of Marzutra. Amar Rabba, Balo Ba'ir, Ein Choshishim Mishim Yichud. So here are seemingly a heter, which is that if a woman's husband is in the city, we don't worry about Yichud. Rashi says, because of Mirtat, she's afraid that her husband's going to come, Bal Hashtati. He's coming any minute now. It's like the equivalent of a Yotzei V'Nichnas by Kashrut, that there's enough fear here that she won't act because she might be get caught because her husband is present in the city. Rashi writes very interesting. He says, "Lahalkot." This is enough to protect against malkot, but seemingly, and that's what Tosafot is medayik out of Rashi, it's still asur. That Bala Beir does not help you in terms of the Easter of Yichud, it just prevents you from getting malkot. Tosafot disagrees. He says, "V'nir lefaresh in chushim klal mishum yichud afilu isur aleka." Tosafot says, "No, I don't agree with that. I think that there is no yichud when Bala Beir, when her husband is in the city. What is considered to be Bala Beir, that is a machloket in the Achronim, as to where Bala Beir means it has to be somewhere literally in proximity to the house where he can come in any time. Or is Bala Beir, if he goes to work in an adjacent city or he heads out to Yerushalayim to go to work, is that still considered Bala Beir because he could pop home, he could come home at any time? Now, in the modern era, what's actually happened is the reverse. Whereas in the era of the Gemara, there was no form of communication or ways to know where people were. Then you have a real issue of hashtati, hashtati. Her husband can pop in on her at any moment. And therefore that fear is enough to prevent against yichud. But today, with the advent of phones and technology which give you the locations of individuals, then maybe today it's the opposite way around. If a husband calls his wife and says, "I'm at work," then the wife knows that there's a minimum of a half an hour before he can get home. And maybe that actually causes more problems. Or today where people's smartphones give them location information about other individuals, then they know exactly where the other person is, and they'll know whether they're coming or not. So the issue of Bala Beir might actually be the reverse, that technology today and what's happened today makes it that Bala Beir is less and less of a protective mechanism because of the fact that you can really know when a person's coming or have a sense of time as to how long it will take the individual to come home. There are others that argue that even today, first of all, without the location services that we have, but if a person calls and says they're at work, doesn't necessarily mean that they're there. They could be, you know, surprising their wife and coming home. And also, it's not, the husband doesn't come home at the same time every day. He pops in here, pops in there. Maybe that's enough. But that's equivalent of Yotzei V'Nichnas. It has to be some sort of element of surprise or deterrence here. And that, according to most Rishonim, only applies in a unidirectional manner, which is that it's only for the wife when Bala Beir is that considered to be a protective manner, or the fear is what makes it that it's not Yichud. But in the reverse, where you have a husband and Ishto Beir, that may not be protective in nature because the husband doesn't necessarily fear the wife coming home. Now again, societally, that might have changed today. I mean, maybe in the time of the Gemara, didn't feel that way. But today, if a person's afraid of the wife coming home, maybe that should be enough of a deterrent. Again, most of the poskim do not accept that and say only Bala Beir is protective in nature. Amar Rav Yosef, petach patuach l'rshut rabim in choshishim mishum yichud. Now this happens to be one of the biggest heterim in yichud, and is probably the way that we get around most issues of yichud, which is that if the doorway opens up to rishut rabim, there's no issue of yichud. The reason being, again here, the fear of someone coming in. When you have a petach patuach to rishut rabim, that means that you don't have privacy. The reason you don't have privacy is because anybody can walk through the door at any time. So when your door is open to the public, then the public himself could walk in at any moment, or the other option is that people can see in. So that helps today, first of all, in terms of windows. If someone is in a place, even though the doors are locked and everything is closed, but if they're in front of a window, which gives visibility to the public, then that's the equivalent of petach patuach l'rishut rabim, because there's no privacy in that location. In terms of what is considered petach patuach l'rishut rabim, this is clearly cultural and societal. Even the Chazon Ish, when he talks about petach patuach l'rishut rabim, he says, well, in the time of the Gemara, that was literally a petach patuach l'rishut rabim. But today, even in an apartment building, if you're in an apartment and the door is open, then the neighbors walk in, they come in, and they'll walk in and out. Again, that depends on the type of apartment building you live in. Now, obviously, in the early days in Israel, that's the way people were. Everybody was a big bungalow, and people would walk in and out of each other's apartments if the door was open. So that would make the equivalent of a petach patuach l'rishut rabim. So there are a number of considerations in this matter. First of all, like instance in a car, as well as in a house. If the door is open, do people walk in? That's really the question. Will people come in? So that's important. And if they don't, then it might be important to ask or tell a neighbor to say, listen, if my door's open, I want you to know that you have permission to come in at any time that you want. It might be a good idea for them to surprise you once in a while. This comes up, first of all, in terms of live-in help or cleaning ladies, that if the husband of the house is in the house and the individual, that woman is there, there's yichud. The only way to prevent that is through petach patuach l'rishut rabim. That means leaving the door open or unlocked, and or being in front of a window where you're visible to rishut rabim. But again, all this depends on, just because there's a window, doesn't mean it's a petach patuach l'rishut rabim. A window can be looking out to a deserted area, and that's not a petach patuach l'rishut rabim. The real issue is whether there's a sense of fear, or the person does not feel a sense of privacy. And that's what makes it that petach patuach l'rishut rabim, is that fear that somebody could walk in, or that somebody could surprise them at any moment. The same is true in a car. If you're in a car with windows, technically there should be no yichud. But that all supposes that you are driving in areas where there are people that are around that are looking in, and maybe importantly, places where there aren't prutzim. If you're in a place where, even if people looked in the windows, they wouldn't consider it to be anything problematic if something was going on in the car, then that's not a preventative measure because nobody would care as to what's happening inside the car. And so that comes up, first of all, in long journeys where people are on the highways and maybe in areas that are secluded. In that case, it might be that as long as you are driving and moving, that there's no issue of yichud because of the windows and the nature of the car. If you stop the car, then there might be an issue of yichud because over there, there's a problem of seclusion. So as long as the car is moving and you're driving, then obviously you can't have yichud. There's nothing going to be amiss because of that yichud. There are others who argue that the yichud itself is problematic, even if nothing can happen in that circumstance, and therefore it would be problematic to be in a car in those secluded areas or in areas where the highways extend and there's nobody driving there. Obviously the time of day would also matter in many of these issues with petach patuach l'rishut rabim. That means that there's a lot of subjectivity to here, and you need to ask the shaila about many of these questions as to what is considered to be petach patuach l'rishut rabim. So in the Mishnah Alochot, he writes there that you have to be careful when people go to date, they go out on a date in a car, and they want to go to somewhere it's quiet so they can speak. So he says that they have to worry about yichud, because the whole intent of driving to somewhere where there's nobody there is so they don't get disturbed. But by the mere fact that that's what they're doing, then they're generating a problem of yichud because they're intentionally going to a place where they will not be disturbed. In their innocence of just trying to create a space where they can speak, sometimes they're also generating a problem of yichud. So you have to be careful about these issues with regards to petach patuach l'rishut rabim. So in petach patuach l'rishut rabim, it doesn't have to be that somebody actually walks in or somebody actually sees them. It's just enough that there's a fear that that will happen, because that's what's preventative in nature. So even if they're in a place where people could walk by, but nobody does walk by, that doesn't mean that it's yichud. Because the fear that somebody walks by is enough to prevent the yichud in that case. So for instance, in elevators, it comes up as well, which is, in terms of the minimum time for yichud, which is generally determined by the Rishonim and then the Achronim to be the amount of time for someone to have bi'ah with this woman. So the time period is actually not so long. And in the older elevators that took longer to go up, or these express elevators, you might have that amount of time in order to perpetrate some sexual encounter with this woman. But many poskim believe that, first of all, the fact that many elevators now have glass in them, that helps out. Or the fact that it could stop at any floor unbeknownst to you. So the fact that it could open up, or the door could open up at any second, that fear factor might be enough. Or today, there are many times there are cameras inside of the elevators. So a lot of these things can help in preventing yichud because people are seeing or seeing what you're doing. Again, petach patuach l'rishut rabim is the key heter that is utilized in terms of preventing yichud and has to be utilized and has to be thought about in a manner that makes sense, so that you're actually creating something that is a fear factor, not simply just an unlocked door and then, okay, there's no yichud over here. There literally has to be some sort of fear associated with the door being unlocked or being open. Rabbi Iklo de Bey Rav Yosef. Bibi came to visit Rav Yosef, but the karach rifta, after they broke bread together, meaning that they ate together, amalu, kule darga mitute Bibi, pull out the stairs from under Bibi. So generally in their day, houses had two floors. You had the main floor, and then you had what's called the aliyah, the upper floor. The access to the upper floor was done through a ladder. I mean, it's a really like a staircase type ladder, a heavy ladder that stood there that allowed you access to the upstairs. When you wanted to shut off access, you took the ladder away, and then whoever's upstairs is basically stuck upstairs. So they ate upstairs, Rabbi Yosef, his wife, and Rabibi. Then they go down afterwards, and Rabbi Yosef and his wife leave, and he wants to pull the ladder out from underneath the attic so that Rabibi is now isolated or locked upstairs so that he can't come down to Rabbi Yosef's wife, and there won't be a problem of Yichud. So it says, V'amar Rabba Ba'ala Ba'irin Kol Shishim Yishum Yichud. Why do you have to worry about Yichud over here? You're here, Rabbi Yosef. Why is this an issue? So it says, Shani Rabibi, Deshush Binte Havai V'Gaisi Bey. So Rabibi is different because he was, whether it's the best man or the very good friend of Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Yosef's wife, whatever it was, is that he had a strong familiarity with the family, and therefore he didn't have the usual fear factor that is involved with Bala Ba'ir because of the fact that they were so close. And so since there's a certain amount of friendship and closeness between them, the normal fear that is associated with Bala Ba'ir would not apply in this case, or the certain amount of distance that's normally between a woman and a visitor would not exist because they were close already. This might also be enhanced by the fact that Rabbi Yosef was a Sagi Nahor, was blind, and so therefore that might also have played a role in this situation, but for that reason he pulled out the stairs.
Amar Rav Kahana, Anashim Bachutz v'Nashim Bifnim.
So if you have here two rooms, where the inner room is captive to the outer room, so in terms of rights, the people in the inner room have rights to access the outer room, because that's their only way out of where they are. In terms of the people in the outer room, they have no rights of access to the inner room because they can get out and they have no reason to go into the inner room. So therefore, if the anashim are on the outside and the nashim are on the inside, ein choshim mishum yichud, don't worry about yichud because the men are not going on the inside because they have no right to go in there. The women who are exiting and going out of the inner room to the outer room, they will be secluded with number of men. And that's not a problem because two men and one woman is not an issue of yichud, so there's going to be no problem of yichud. On the other hand, anashim yibifnim, nashim bebachutz, if the men are in the inner area and the women are in the outer area, now you're going to have a problem of yichud because the women are not going in, but the men coming out. When they're exiting, one man could exit and then he'll be amongst many women. And we said before that two women and one man is considered to be yichud. Again, whether we're talking about cases where there are multiple men or multiple women in the two areas, or simply two men and two women, it's not clear. If you explain it as two men and two women, it makes the cases a lot easier. But some explain it still as being multiple men and multiple women. That was the statement of Rav Kahana. In a Braita, we have just the opposite, which is, if the men are on the inside, it's okay. Whereas if the women are on the inside, it's problematic. And the reason being, as Rashi explains over here, if the men are on the inside, then the guy who goes out to the women on the outside, we worried before about Yichud, but the reason you're not going to worry about Yichud is because he doesn't know whether the guy behind him is also going to exit. Just like he exited and ended up in this outer area with the women, he has a fear that at any moment another guy could walk out behind him and then catch him in this area. So that fear is enough to say that there's no problem of the exiting. On the other hand, if it's the other way around, which is that the men are on the outside and the women are on the inside, we're worried about one of the men sneaking into the inside room. And over there, he wouldn't expect another man to come in because they don't generally exit in that manner. They don't generally go in there. The fact that he snuck in, it gives him now a certain amount of free rein there because he doesn't expect any man to come in. So for that reason, it would be just the opposite. So Amar Abaye, Ashad Amar Rav Kahana Hochi, B'tana Matnita Ipcha. Now that we have Rav Kahana's statement, plus we have a bright that says the opposite, Anan Aved L'chumra. We'd be machmir like both of them and say basically it doesn't matter if the men are on the inside or the outside, women inside, women outside, we would restrict this because there's risk. And anytime we have risk, we want to prevent that risk. Or in essence, which is we're going to see up now coming up in the Gemara, anytime you have a mingling of the sexes, we want to worry about that. Anytime that there's some sort of event or occasion for men and women to be in a single location, we're going to try to keep them as separate as possible because if we allow mingling to happen, there's risks of yichud and there's risks of misconduct. Abaye dar gulfe. Abaye used to set up earthenware utensils between the men and the women. Dvava dair kane. And Rava used to put up reeds between the men and the women. You can see in Rashi, the reason for this is, makom kvutzat anashim v'nashim. Anytime you have a gathering of men and women, o the drusha or the chupa, whether it's for the drusha or for a chupa, hayim sader kankanim shacheresh habei b'neim. He used to put up these earthenware utensils between them. Shim yavo zetzel ze yikashkashu v'yishmukol. That if they try to cross the line, it'll make noise, meaning that it's not only a separation, but it's an alarm system. It says that if you try to move from one side to the other, the noise will be made and people will be aware of the fact that you are moving across the line. And the same is true by Rava. He was putting in reeds that make noise when you cross between them. So again, to prevent women and men crossing over. Amar Avin or Amar Abaye, Sakva Deshata Rigla. The nadir of the year is the regel, right? Which is the sorest point of the year is the regel, because that's the time when men and women come together. Now Rashi says it's for the drusha. On the other hand, the Bali Atosifot seem to say that it's a case where people would just get together. Or Vinotim Ayin Zelzeh, or they start to look and people have access to each other in these situations, then you could have problems that arise from that. And then Tosafot brings a big line at the end, which is, V'yeshomrim l'kach nagu litanot achar Pesach l'achar Sukkot. This is the reason that we fast Bahab after Sukkot and Bahab after Pesach. It's because of this problem, which is that since the regals nadir of the year, because of this intermingling of the sexes, therefore there are these inappropriate rendezvous that take place in these situations. So therefore, in order to be mechaper for that problem, we have the Bahab to fast afterwards to remind people that there's a certain amount of pritzult and unbecoming behavior that takes place during the regal because of the fact that people are gathering together. There are masses of people gathering together, whether it's to hear the drosha or whether it's simply to socialize. Those are issues that lead to problematic behavior. And that problematic behavior, we try to be mechaper for after the regel. Obviously, the Bahab is trying to address the issues of pritzult. It's not necessarily addressing the issues of someone who actually did violate in any yisurim, but it's trying to remind people that there's a certain amount of relaxed atmosphere and simcha and pritzut that takes place during the regel that we have to be mechaper for. Hanach shvuyaita da'atai l'narada. We had these captives that were brought to Narada. Askino l'bei Rav Amram. He commanded that they be redeemed, and then they brought him to his house for safekeeping until they could be returned to wherever they lived or to wherever they belonged. So they brought the Askilu Bei Rav Amram Chasida. They brought it to the house of Rav Amram Chasida. Ashkula Darga Mikamayu. So they took away, again, the same thing. They put the women in the attic and they pulled the staircase away. So when one of them passed the skylight, meaning that the opening between the upper area and the lower area, Nafun Nahora Bi Puma, light either hit her face and therefore he was able to see her beauty, or as Rashi says, that her face radiated light. Shakle Rav Amram Ladarga, Dulavi Yacholin, Be'asar Lemidlaya. So Rav Amram was taken by this woman, and his Yetzer Hara was activated, and then he got a rush of adrenaline, and he was able to move this staircase, which normally it took 10 people to move this staircase. It was so heavy that even 10 people was questionable if they could move it. Dayo Lechudei. He moved it himself to get over there. I mean, that was the extent of the adrenaline and the yetzer that was driving him at this point. Salik Vazil. So then he started to ascend in order to get up to the woman. Kimata the palga, dargo. If when he got halfway up the ladder or the staircase, ifshach, he braced himself, locked himself in place. Rama Kala, he raised his voice, he screamed out, Nura Bey Amram. There's a fire in the house of Rav Amram. And again, this is in the days where you had the fire lines, and you needed the whole community to come to put out the fire. So he screams, there's a fire in Bey Amram. Atu Rabbanon, everybody comes running to the house of Rav Amram to put out the fire. Amalei Kasiftinan, you embarrassed us. Or whether you are embarrassed, it's not clear here which way it goes, but seemingly it means that the students are saying, you've embarrassed us now because you've been caught in the act. Clear here that you were on your way up to do something wrong with these shvuyot. And now the whole neighborhood knows about it. Not only do you know about it, but the whole neighborhood knows about it. Rashi says that he did it intentionally to embarrass himself, to weaken the Yetzer Hara. He wanted to weaken the Yetzer Hara, and by embarrassing himself, he wanted to take away that Yetzer anymore because that embarrassment would make it that in the future he wouldn't want to act or engage in this type of behavior. The Ramar Shah points out that he wasn't necessarily lying when he said there's a fire inside of Rav Chasida's house because it was the fire of the Yetzer Hara, as we're going to see at the end of the story, that was burning inside of him. So he wasn't talking about a literal fire, but rather a figurative fire that was burning. So everybody came, and that stopped him from perpetrating this act.
Amar lohu. So Rav Amram Chassid responds to the students and says, Mutav tichsifu be'amram be'alma adain. It's better, now depending how you read it before, it's better that I am embarrassed in this world, or he's saying to them, better that my yeshiva, or those my students, are embarrassed in this world, and that you won't be embarrassed about me when we go to Olam Haba because I did something wrong. Meaning that the embarrassment here is worth so much more than the, had I gone through with this act. And then you would have been embarrassed later on. That embarrassment is real embarrassment. Ashbei, the Anpak Minei, so he takes a shvuah to tell the Yitzhar to get out of him. Navak Minei ki amuda denura. Came out of him like a pillar of fire. And so that goes back to what I said before. The Marsha indicates that when he said there was a fire in the house of Rav Amram Chassid, he wasn't necessarily lying. He was saying that there was a figurative fire, the Yitzhar was burning inside of them. Rabbi Chazi da'at nura v'ana bisra says, you are fire and I'm flesh and blood. V'ana difna minach, and I'm still able to overcome you. And so Rav Amram Chassid was proud of the fact that he was able to do that. It might have been also that he was fighting fire with fire. Because we know that embarrassment and busha is also compared to fire. So that the busha was what he was using as the means to overcome the Yetzer Hara, which was also a fire. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Mitlot Seitz, Vovrei Avera. Rabbi Meir used to poke fun at people who were sinners, or in essence, disparage those people, that they weren't able to overcome their Yetzer Hara. Yom Achad Idmei Lei Satan Ki Itita Ba'ach Kisa Ne'ara. So the Satan says, you know, you think you're so strong, you think you're so good. So one day the Satan showed up on the other side of the river, dressed up as a beautiful woman. Lava mavra, there was no ferry across, there was no bridge across. Nakat mitzra b'ka avar. He took what seemingly is a rope, and there was a thin board or piece of wood or a tree that went across the river. And basically you held onto the rope and you walked across this thin beam across the river. It wasn't exactly an easy crossing. It was pretty precarious to cross in this way. Despite that fact, he jumped up and he went across the river. Kimata Pago Mitzra, when he got halfway across, Shavke, the Satan disappeared or turned back into the Satan and not a beautiful woman. Had it not been for the fact that they're announcing up in Shemaim, he's Haru Bir Rabbi Meir Vitorato, be careful of Rabbi Meir and his Torah, Shavite le Dmeich Tarte Moi. I would have made your blood into two ma'a, which basically means like into 2 cents. I would have made you worthless because you would have sinned here, and then all that you had done would have been for naught. But the Satan is basically saying to him, listen, you think you're so big or such a big gun that you can't be tempted. I'll show you that you can be just as tempted as any of the Ovei Avira. And basically, don't judge a person until you're in their place, and you shouldn't make fun of the Ovei Avira or think that you're so good that you can overcome the Satan. Rabbi Kiva Mitlotseitz Beovrei Avera. Rabbi Kiva also used to make fun of those that were sinners. Yom Achadid Meile Satan Ki Itata Bereish Dikla. One point the Satan shows up as a beautiful woman at the top of a palm tree. Nakte Le Dikla Bekasalek Vaazil. He climbed, scaled the palm tree in order to get up to the woman. Kimata the Palge De Dikla. When he got halfway up the palm tree, Shavke. The Satan left. Amari Lav De Machzei Bekiya Zaru Rabbi Akiva Torato. It wasn't for the fact that in Shemayim they say, be careful Rabbi Kiva and his Torah, Shavita the Demech, Tate Mai. Same thing, I would have made your blood into two ma'ol, or basically I would have cheapened your blood because you would have been worthless if you sinned in this instance. Palimo, Ayaragio the Meimar, Koyoma, Gira, Beinei de Satan. Palimo, who is a Talmud of Rabbi, used to say every day, put a thorn or a sword in the eye of the Satan. This is actually terminology that we saw much earlier in the Masechta and Daf Lamed. Over there was talking about the age when a person gets married, that a person should get married before their Yetzer overtakes them. And then the Gemara over there says that if you get married too young, it's like saying Gira Beinei de Satan. It's like poking fun or sticking a sword in the eye of the Satan. You can read that one of two ways there. Either as positive, which means basically the Satan can't get you because you preempted him so much, or it's making fun of the Satan. You're doing something that's so extreme that you're actually poking fun of the Satan, and then he'll make extra efforts to come after you, and that's exactly what's going to happen here as well, which is that the Satan's going to make efforts to come after him because of the way that he conducted himself. Yom Echad, Malei Yomei D'Kippurim Ava. There was Erev Yom Kippur. Yidmei Lei Kanya. He appeared to him, the Satan, like a pauper. Ata Kara Bava. He went and was knocking on the door, calling into the house. Afiku Lei Rifta. So they took bread out to him to feed the poor person. On a day like Erev Yom Kippur, where everybody's having a suda before the fast day, everybody's sitting inside and I'm outside. So they said, fine, you come into the house, and they gave him, they served him bread. Says that everybody else in the world is eating around a table, and here I am in the antechamber or in the guest room here, eating by myself. They brought him and seated him at the table with everyone else. When he was sitting there, he filled himself up, meaning that he caused himself to have shichana, which seemed to be like boils or blisters. The kibbe are sores that were exuding pus. So he had all the shichana kibbe alei, babakabi be mile demais. And he was acting repulsively at the table. So this guy was not exactly conducting himself with the proper etiquette. And besides that, he was physically disgusting or repulsive. So amalei, so Palimo says to him, Tib Shapir. Get your act together here. Sit up properly and act properly at the table. Amarlei, Mavali Kaso. Give me a cup. Give me some wine. Yovale Kaso. They gave him some wine. Achmar, whether he coughed or he expectorated. Shadabe Kicho, he put his phlegm into the cup. He spit it into the cup. Nacharube. Palimo chastised him. Said, what are you doing? You can't do this at a table. Shaka Umit. He swooned and died, and as Rashi says over here, he feigned dying. Shamu Davikamre Palimo Katal Gavra, Palimo Katal Gavra. Rumors started to circulate outside the house that Palimo had killed someone, meaning that when he had chastised him, the guy feigned dying. And so now it looked like that the chastisement of Palimo is what caused this guy to die. And then the rumors started to circulate that Palimo had killed someone. Arak Vatashinav Sheba Beta Kisei. So he wanted to escape from this, so he went and hid in the bathroom out in the field because he didn't want to be accused of killing somebody, or he was fearful that the king's men would then come and take him away because he murdered a citizen of the country. Azabatre, this Satan ran after him. Nafal Kameh, he fell before him, and Palimo, I guess, was trying to beg him for forgiveness. Ki dechazia dava mitzdayer galile nafshe. When he saw that he was really terrible pain or difficulty over this circumstance, the Satan revealed himself to Palimo. Amalei, my time amar tochi. So he says to Palimo, explaining why he was there to give Palimo a hard time, is that why do you say all the time girabene the Satan? Why do you say that you should have an arrow in the eye of the Satan? Meaning that you're making fun of me, you're poking fun of me. That's not right. So Palimo says to him, what should I say? I'm doing that because I'm really davening that I should be saved from the Satan. When I say that there should be an arrow in the eye of the Satan, I am basically saying I want to control my Yetzer, because lo taturu acharei enichem, people get drawn after their eyes. So when he says eyes, he's saying I want to temper the Yetzer Hara, and that's what I'm trying to do. So he says, Amalei, leima mai rachmona nigar beba Satan. You should say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be goer, should chastise or shut down the Satan. Maybe that should be done in a manner of Fila, that Hashem should intervene to begin to protect against the Yetzer Hara. That's what we have in the pasuk in Zechariah, Yigar Hashem Becha Satan. We ask Hashem to intervene or to block the activities of the Satan. Rabbi Chia Barashi, Rabbi Rogil Kol Idan, Daba Nofel the Ape, Haba Amar Rachaman Yatzilenu Meyetzer Hara. So we say Rabbi Chia Barashi had this practice. Every time he used to fall down, meaning that every time he said Tachnu and he was davening, he used to say, Hashem, save us from the Yetzer Hara. Yom Achad Shamit Inu Debitu, his wife overheard him, saying, Tachton, saying, save me from the Yetzer Hara. Amra Michte, Hakamashani Deparish Leminai. There's many years that he hasn't had any intimate relations with me. My time Hakamar Ochi. Why exactly is he asking for the Yetzer Hara to be taken away from him? So either that's because he was already of advanced age, and he no longer had any desires, and so he hadn't been together with his wife for a long time. Now she hears him saying, listen, save me from the Yetzer Hara. And she says, wait a minute, if he still has the Yetzer Hara, then I want to have intimate relations with him again. Or she's thinking, listen, if he's not having intimate relations with me and he's being asked to save from the Yetzer Hara, who's the other woman that he's asking to have his Yetzer Hara be shut down about? His wife is thinking this aloud to herself. So then she decides to take the matters into her own hand. Yom Echada Ava Kagaris Beginte, there Rav Chia Barashi was learning out in his garden. Kashta Nafsha, She dressed herself up in a manner, obviously, where she was not easily recognizable by him. Chalfa, Tanya Kameh. She passed once and then again in front of him. Amrla, Manat. So he looked up and he says, who are you? Amra, Ana Cheruta, Tahadri Miyuma. He says, I am Cheruta. Rashi says she was a famous zonah in their city. And I came back today, and I'm just fresh off the boat, ready for you. Tava, he propositioned her. Amralei, Aiti Nialei Lahachumano, Deresh Tzutzita. Go bring me, whether it literally means the rimon, the pomegranate at the top of the tree, or on the top bough of the tree, or it means the date at the top of the palm tree. Shavar, Azal Aja Nialoh. He jumped up, scooted up the tree, and then brought it to her, meaning that he did whatever she asked for. Kiata the Beite. So after then, he had gotten together with this woman, who is his wife, and had this affair with this woman. He came back home. Habakashagra de Bitu Tanura. His wife was firing up the oven. Salik Vikayoti Begave. He went and sat inside the oven. Amralei, my hi. She says to him, what's going on here? What are you doing inside of the oven? Amralea, Hachi Vachi Ava Masse. To his credit, he disclosed everything to his wife. He told her what happened. Amralei, Anahavai. Says it was me. Loashkach ba adayavile simane. He didn't believe her until she gave him simanim as to everything that transpired there to say that it was her. Amar la ana mi al isurei kavne. In the end, Hashem protected me. I didn't sin with someone, but I had intended for it to be someone else. Even though it was you in the end, my intentions were for isur. Ko yomav shoto tzadik ayemit ane. All the remainder of his life, he used to fast. I should make bota mita till he died from that death. Seemingly from the fasting, he died from fasting because of his so distraught over the fact that he had submitted himself to this Aveira, where even though it wasn't Aveira, he had thought that he was doing an Isur, and he had gone ahead and done it anyway. In terms of sitting in the oven, there are those that ask, how could he sit in the oven? Because then he'd be committing suicide. Is that permissible? So some say, well, if it's in a process of tshuva, we see many times in the Gemara that Amoraim did act in this way in order to do tshuva. Or others suggest that he wasn't really trying to commit suicide, he was just trying to burn his feet, and then that would be a kapara for what he did wrong. And that's what they say later on, that that's what caused him to die, that the burning of his feet in the oven stayed with him for the rest of his life, and that's what caused him to die eventually. What you see from all of these stories is that the tzaddikim, tanaim, amoraim that are found in the Gemara are human beings. And that they are normal people and they have normal desires like every one of us. And so that in some ways obligates us or incriminates us because we say, how can we overcome? How can we do these things? They were great people. They didn't have these problems. Meantime, you see here, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Meir, Palimo, and here Rabbi Chirba Ashi are normal people drawn by the same desires that we have. And nevertheless, they did overcome them, or the Satan was trying to trick them and get in their way, but they could be tempted by the same things that we are tempted, and therefore we also have to, number one, therefore work hard to overcome those desires, and also know that if Chas v'Shalom, someone is nichshol in these things, that there is a way back, or that you are a human being, and sometimes when you're nichshol, you have to do tshuva and try to rectify these situations. In all these situations, the individuals were alone. That's the whole idea of having someone else there. Fear factor or the prevention factor is that there is someone else, which is true. If you have two ksherim there, they may not do anything. If one kasher alone, he might end up in a problematic situation. That's the whole problem with ichud. And the whole problem with ichud is that isolation or seclusion is what causes the problem. So as you add in another kasher, none of this would happen. If Rabbi Kiva was together with Rabbi Meir, this won't happen. When Akiva's alone, Rabbi Meir's alone, then these types of things happen. Netanyo, we have a bright Isha, this is the Demapike, Ishala Heferam, which means that the husband of this woman was nullifying her Nidarim, Vashem Yislachla, and Hashem will forgive her. But Me'achatub Midaber, what is the circumstance in this Pasuk? Bishash Nadra B'Nazir, the woman who took a Neder Nizirut, Bishama Bala V'Eferla, and then her husband heard about it, and he nullified it. And she has no clue that her husband nullified it. And even though she did not know that it was nullified, she violated this neder nizirut, and went ahead and was mitameh lemeitim, and drinking wine, and violating it wholesale. The reason that the Gemara sets it up this way is because the pasuk is problematic. It says that the husband nullified it, and now she needs forgiveness. Why does she need forgiveness? Because the husband nullified it. If the husband nullified it and she didn't do anything wrong, then she doesn't need forgiveness. So this is what the Gemara says the case is. Therefore, she needs forgiveness because even though there was no Isser that was done, because the neder was nullified, but in her mind, or in her approach, she didn't know that. And therefore, when she was violating the Isser, she thought she was actually doing something that was wrong, even though it wasn't wrong. And that's the proof to the fact that Rav Chiya Bashi, just the fact that you think it's an Isur, even though it turns out not to be Isur, is enough of a problem. Rav Akiva, Kavi Mati, Lai Tsuka, Vabochi. Rav Akiva, when he got to this puzzle, used to cry, Amar. Someone who intended to eat pork and ended up with kosher meat. Amra Torah, Tzricha, Kapara, Veslicha. And the Torah says you need to gain atonement and forgiveness. Someone who intends to eat pork and ends up eating pork, certainly they need kapara. Here the Torah requires kapara even when you did nothing wrong. Just the intent to do something wrong was enough. Certainly when you actually do the wrong, then you do need kapara and slicha. Yosef Adavar Tomer, v'lo yada v'ashem v'nasa avono. He didn't know. It was an accident. V'ashem, and he's found guilty. V'nasa avono. And therefore now he has to bear the iniquity. K'shaya Rabbi Kiva Magila Pasuk Zaya Boche. And God, this person used to cry. Here he intended to eat kosher fats, and instead he got the non-kosher fats. Amra Torah v'liyadav Hashem, that even though he was unbeknownst to him, it was bli kavana. Nevertheless, v'ashem, he's found guilty. Now he has to deal with that sin. Someone who intended to eat the non-kosher fats and ate non-kosher fats, al-chad kam v'kama. Certainly that would be the case. Isi ben Yehuda Omer, v'lo yadav Hashem, v'asav v'no, same pasuk, v'dabar zeh idavu kol adavim. All those that are in mourning or sighing should sigh over this pasuk, meaning that this is a terrible incrimination of people, because here where you didn't intend to do something wrong and did something wrong, you're punished or you're obligated to bring a korban. Certainly in a case where you actually did something wrong, then you're going to be held liable for that and you're going to need kapara. What exactly Isi ben Yehuda added here versus Rabbi Akiva, meaning that he's saying the same thing, just in different words, might relate to their machloket in the Gemara with regards to an asham, taloi. When are you chayav an asham taloi? Asham taloi is when you have a safek, when you violated an isur that you would be chayav a chatat for if you did it bishogeg. So there the Gemara has a machloket as to what the scenario has to be. Isi ben Yehuda is a belief that you have to have a choice between two pieces, and then you chose the Isur. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion there that even if you take one piece, and it turns out that that piece was not kosher, and you thought it was kosher, then you have to bring an Asham Taloi. So what Rabbi Akiva is saying is, in a case where the item in front of you was Isur, it turned out to be Isur when you thought it was Heter, you have to have Kapara, then certainly you have to have Kapara in a case where you violated it. Isi ben Yehuda comes to say, even in a case where there are two pieces in front of you, and the heter was there and the isur was there and you made a mistake and picked the wrong piece. So an asham taloi is only when nikva isura, when the isur is already in place, that's when you're held accountable. But the case of Rabbi Akiva would not require kapara because there was not nikva isura. Nevertheless, you have to bring an asham taloi. So certainly, if you violate an isur, you have to bring kapara or deal with the isur that was violated. That's number one. Number two is, with regards to the fact that we say that a Kosh Baruch was not mitztarif machshava ra'ah lemaseh. That generally, if you have a bad intent or a bad thought, and you do not carry it out, Hashem does not punish us for those bad thoughts. So why over here, all of a sudden, a person has improper intent, but it turns out he does a maseh heter, why are we holding them accountable? The answer might be exactly that. That Hashem does not hold you liable or culpable when you have the bad thoughts or the bad intent, and you do nothing. But in the case where you do something, even though the something turns out to be heter because your husband nullified the neder, or it turns out that whatever you thought you were eating was, it was not Isur but heter, in that case, Hashem will punish me for the bad intent because you actually did a maisa, even though it was a maisa heter. Right? Back to the Mishnah. Mityachid adam imimo. Person is allowed to be in seclusion with his mother. I'm reviewed on my Ravasi. Mityachid adam imachuto. Person is allowed to be biyichud with his sister. Radari imimo bimbito, and he's allowed to live with his mother or his daughter. And the reason being that there is no issue of yichud or any temptation with these women. And therefore, the person's allowed to live together with them. Rashi writes over here, by mityachid imachoto leprakim. That means that on occasion. He cannot be in a permanent state, but on occasion. He can't live together with his sister in the house, because that already is questionable. But on occasion, if he's together with his sister, we don't worry about yichud if it's on a infrequent occasion, or as others poskim say, if it's over 30-day periods, that's fine. But once it becomes much more permanent, then it's an issue with regards to achoto. By the case of imo and bito, it's irrelevant to how much time or how much duration you have there. Ki amra kamei de Shmuel, when he said this over to Shmuel, amar asur liyitiyachedim kol arayot shebetorah, v'afilu im be'ima. Shmuel says, no yichud with arayot, that means that includes mother, daughter, sister, and even an animal, we don't allow you to be secluded with them. Tznan, our Mishnah. Not only do we allow you to be secluded with them, we let you sleep naked together, again, in their early ages. So what is Shmuel speaking about here? Tziyufta de Shmuel. That's a strong refutation of Shmuel's position. What are you going to do with this braita? Achoto, v'chamoto, v'shar kol arayot. His sister, his mother-in-law, and all the other arayot, shebet Torah, ain't mityachedim em. You're not allowed to be biyuchud with them. Ela be'edim, except if you have witnesses there. I mean, that it's not yichud anymore. Be'edim in, shlo be'edim lo. It only works if you have edim there. If you don't have edim, no way. Ela tanayehi. It is a machloket tanaim as to whether you can be secluded together with certain of the arayot. Look, everybody agrees. By arayot that are more distant in relationship, then you can't have yichud with them and you can't be together with them. On the other hand, the question really revolves here around whether one could be, according to the way that the Gemara's written out, with his sister, can you be isolated, or his mother-in-law? Seemingly, the machloket, the way the Gemara lays it out, also applies to a daughter or a mother as well, even though it's not made explicit in the Braita. And the Gemara says, the Tanya, Amar Rabbi Meir, Hisaru bi mipnei biti. And this gives corroboration to that, which is Rabbi Meir says, be careful for me and my daughter, meaning he tells his people of his household, make sure that I don't have yichud with my daughter. Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Hisaru bi mipnei kalati. Make sure that I don't have yichud with my daughter-in-law. So that they were doing this in preventative measures. Ligleg alav oto tamid. One of his students poked fun at him because of that. Amrebao mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Toyom mamim miumatim at nechshal oto tamid b'chamuto. It wasn't a long time before that Talmid had an incident with his mother-in-law where he had an illicit affair with her. And therefore this guy was poking fun of Rabbi Tarfon, he himself got caught up in something like this. Again, the Gemara is giving examples of the fact that this behavior, which seems extreme, is not so extreme because people get caught up in these sins all the time. Afilu im beima, even with a animal, they would not be secluded. Baya michlalei mikula dabro. He used to clear out or have all the animals cleared out from the field where he was learning or where he was passing by. Vsheshi mabrele mitzra. Rav Sheshit used to put them on the other side of the boundary, or similarly on the other side of the river. He would clear them out, the animals. Rav Chana min Arda, iklo the Rav Kahana the Pum Nara. Rav Chana min Arda, iklo the Rav Kahana. So Rav Chana min Arda went to visit Rav Kahana the Pum Nara in the city of Pum Nara, which we saw earlier. Pum Nara was a Jewish city that had a non-Jewish city surrounding it. We discussed that just a little earlier. Chazi diyoti v'kogoros. We saw that he was learning. V'kaimi be'ima kamei. And there was this animal passing in front of him, walking in front of him. Amalei lo sabar lo amar afilu im be'ima. That there's a problem to be biyukot even with an animal. Amalei lavadatai. I was so engrossed in my learning, I didn't even notice that the animal was here. You ask, and a fair question, is that tomorrow's daf, the first Mishnah says that we don't worry about, that we're not choshed people with bestiality. We don't worry about these types of behaviors. Why all of a sudden over here we have lists of Amoraim that are worrying about these behaviors? So Tosafot addressed that and says, Nira dahani Amorai chumra ba'alma ka'abde. That all these Amoraim were doing lifnim ishurat adin, this is a chumra ba'alma. Va'ayna kaimelon ki Rabbanan de Rabbi Yehuda. And we pass like the Rabbanan of Rabbi Yehuda, I mean the position of the Rabbanan in the next Mishnah, which is that we don't worry about lo nechshedu Yisrael lo ala mishkav zachar v'lo al beima. We don't worry about homosexuality or bestiality. There's none of that in terms of suspicions of people. Amarova mityached adam im shtei yivamot. Person is allowed to be mityached with two individuals. Here, two women who have a natural adversity to each other or hatred for each other because of their circumstance. The women that are listed here are the women mentioned in Yivamot in the Mishnah who are not allowed to testify on behalf of a woman that her husband passed away, because they have a vested interest in seeing her downfall. They hate each other. Gemara there in Yivamot discusses why there's tension between them. So, shtei yivamot, Two Yivamot, meaning these are sisters-in-law that have the possibility of becoming co-wives. Im Shtei Yitzarot. Two co-wives. Or Im Esha V'chamuta, a woman and her mother-in-law. And then here the Gra and the Bach both fit in another one, which is Ubat Chamuta, or the daughter of her mother-in-law, sister-in-law, the husband's sister. Vim Isha Ubat Bala, a woman and her stepdaughter. All these people, again, have natural tensions between them. And the reason for that is we worry about when you have seclusion of one man with two women, is that both women could be enticed or seduced into doing the same act, and they will cover up for each other. In this circumstance, since they hate each other, they can't wait for one of them to do something wrong, because they definitely won't join in, because now they got the ace card over this other woman, and therefore they would tell on this woman. They can't wait to publicize what happened. In that circumstance, there's a automatic fear factor that's built in, because both women won't acquiesce to the overtures of the individual. And also, you're allowed to seclude him isha b'tinoket sheyodat tambiya v'eino moseret etzma l'bidya. This is also a big heter, which is you can be secluded with a woman and a young child. Now the young child has to be old enough that they know what bia is, or they know enough to tell about what transpired, but not old enough that they would be a participant, or that they would be enticed to act in the same manner. There is a machloket amongst the poskim. Generally, the poskim say that this is a small age range, generally from probably about 6 to 9, that it runs. Once they hit 9, we're going to see in the Gemara in a second, then already the issues of sexual maturity already kick in. Below the age of 6, they don't really know what they're witnessing or that they're going to tell over what transpired. So in that window, you have children that would be able to prevent yichud, and this is what we use, again, by a chupat nida. In a case of chupat nida, that's generally what they do in order to prevent yichud. And a chupat nida is they use a child of this age in order to prevent the yichud. Higdilu ze yashen b'kisuto. So the Mishnah ends off that once the individuals grow up and become older, you can't sleep together naked. You have to be clothed in the bed. The kama. What is that transition age between the time when you're allowed to sleep with them naked and when you cannot anymore? Amar Rav Dabar Rav Aza, Amar Rav Ashi. Tinoket bat teisha shanim biyom echad. By a young girl, it's 9 years and one day. The Rosh over here has a girsa that is 3 years and one day, but none of the other Rishonim have a girsa like that. Even though the Yushalmi seems to corroborate what the Rosh says, nevertheless, none of the other poskim have this, and therefore, we're not really choshesh for this shita of the Rosh. So it's 9 years and one day. Vitinok ben shtemisre shana biyom echad is 12 years and one day. Igadamre, some say, Tinok bat shtemisre shana biyom echad, 12 years and one day. Tinok ben shloshesre biyom echad is 13 and one day. Vzeh vzeh, kadeshi yu. Now vzeh vzeh, in this case, can refer to two possibilities. Vzeh vzeh could be both the boy and the girl, in the latter case. Vzeh vzeh can mean, the way Rashi means it, is both in the first case, and in the latter case, kadeshi yu shadaim nechonu v'sarech tzimeach. That has to be the fact that they've already begun to have physical maturity, which is that her breasts have already begun to develop, and they've reached puberty. And that's the way Rashi reads it. Rashi reads that even in the first case where it's 9 years and one day, they also have to have hit puberty in order for it to be a problem. What all we're saying is that at 9 years and one day, we consider it puberty. Before that time, we consider it to be a shuma. But at 9 years and one day, we consider it to be puberty. And the same is true in the second case, that it's puberty that defines the sexual maturity of these individuals. Others say that this is only modifying or qualifying the second statement, that 9 years and one day is not qualified by puberty, but that's an age, just a pure age range, 9 years and one day or 12 years and one day. The second case, when we talk about 12 years and one day or 13 years and one day, that is qualified by this statement. Amram Rafam Bar Papa Amram Chislo Shano Sheinam Bosha Lamod Bifnanav Arum. That's only if the individual is not embarrassed to stand naked before their father. I mean, the daughter's not embarrassed to be naked in front of their father, or the son's not embarrassed to be in front of his mother. But if they're embarrassed, then it would be asur. This has ringings of the story in Breshit, where Adam and Chava are naked, and they were not embarrassed at the fact that they were naked, but after they sinned, then they were embarrassed, and they wanted to cover up their nakedness. So an awareness or a sexual awareness is also associated with embarrassment of one's nakedness. So what you have here is basically there's a process in the sexual maturity of the individual, partly physical, partly psychological. And so what the Gemara here gives, it gives you an objective standard, which is an age, but it also gives you a subjective standard, which says that it's not going to happen instantaneously. It's a developmental process. And therefore, they give you a subjective measure, which is the idea of busha. So together, you come up with a range of ages where the individual or children are moving from being, quote-unquote, innocent into the world where already they have a certain amount of sexual awareness. And for different children, that'll be at different ages. My taima, how come they're embarrassed? Because yetzer al busha, that the yetzer hara already entered, and that embarrassment is associated with a sexual desire. Again, up front, they may not be so aware of it. But that mere fact that they're embarrassed means that there's a certain amount of awareness that's starting to develop in the child, which leads to the physical maturation and sexual maturation. Vachar Baba went to visit his son-in-law, Rav Chisda. Shaklet bat parate. He took his granddaughter, Otvei Bekanfei. He was cuddling with her. He was playing with her, sat her on his lap. Amalei lo sabar lamar demikadsho. Don't you know that she is already married? So now, many of the Rishonim, many of the people ask here, what does that matter? I mean, that the isur of erva between a grandfather and a granddaughter is as severe as a problem of eshadish. So then, why would you introduce the problem of eshadish here if simply the problem of erva exists? What does her being married have anything to do with this? So different Rishonim deal with it. Rashi says over here, you should stay away from an Eshadish. It's just not a good idea to be together or play around with an Eshadish. The Tosafot Riazakain says over here, that's evidence of the fact that she is already beginning to sexually mature, because otherwise she wouldn't get involved or be interested in marriage. The fact that she's already Mikudeshet shows you that she's already beginning to develop that sense. The fact that she is old enough that the father is willing to marry her off also indicates a certain amount of maturity over here. And that's, he's connecting it to the previous Gemara saying that it's Tambia. Others just suggest that it's not a good idea to be involved with Eshadish, even though in this case it seemingly is meaningless. Nevertheless, just that type of practice is not a good habit to get into. So he says back to him, Amarlei, Tavachar Ba'aba says to his son-in-law, Rav Chisda, Avart Lacha the Rav. You violated a member of Rav. Damar Rav Yudam Rav, Yitem Rav Elazar, Asula Adam Shikadesh, Pitok Shiktana, Ashut Tagdil, Vatomar, Beploni Ani Rotsa. That you're not allowed to marry off your daughter until she's of an age where she can be discerning and pick who she wants to get married to. So what are you doing marrying off my granddaughter who is too young to make that choice? Mar Nami Avar Le Shmuel. So Rav Chisda says back to him, you violated the din of Shmuel. Damar Shmuel, Amish Tam Shimbi Isha. You're not allowed to utilize, quote-unquote, a woman. Seemingly, what this means is that you can't come into physical contact with a woman. You're calling it shimush, which means to play around with, or to get warmed up with, or to cuddle with a woman. That would be inappropriate. So, Amalei, Anakidak to Shmuel severely. I hold like the other member of Shmuel, which is, Amar Shmuel, Hakol L'Shem Shamayim. That if it's all done for the sake of heaven, then it's okay. The way Rashi says, Ein Dati Acharea, the Chibat Ishut. I have no interest in my granddaughter for marriage. Ela lechibat kurva. I just want to be close with her. Basod korat ruach leima. And to make her mother happy, my daughter happy, shani mechabeve bita. If I show love and I take care of my granddaughter, that gets my daughter, makes my daughter happy and excited because the grandfather is close with the granddaughter. And Tosafot says this. Bazuanu somchem ashka. We rely on this statement of Rav Achar Ba'aba that a call to Shem Shemayim, Shano Mishtamshim Benashim. When we, quote unquote, utilize women today, or I guess what Tosafot is saying is the fact that grandparents engage with their grandchildren or in relatives that are mutarim in this manner, that we don't see that as being problematic, but we assume it's a call to Shem Shemayim, that there's no yetzer here and there's no intent for Ishut, it's simply love and a bringing a nachat ruach to the relatives. And so you also see from here is that when we say that there's no yichud between a parent and a child, that extends beyond parent and child, but grandparent to grandchild, and even great-grandparent to great-grandchild. I mean, anybody that's along that line of parent-child will not have an issue of yichud, because we see here from the incident here that they had the same din with a grandparent to a grandchild as they have from a parent to a child. Okay, we're going to stop here with a Mishnah on the top of Pei Bet, Amud Aleph.